Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I am indeed Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and I am delighted that you were joining us this week. Big news. What's my big news?
I don't know. No, other than the fact that you chose donuts that look like vomit.
We'll get to that in a moment. Oh, I know, because I finally finished. I don't know why. Sometimes there's a review that's just harder to write.
Uh-huh.
And my review of the Cadillac Escalade IQ took me a while.
Sometimes that happens.
And generally for really good reasons. Because once you get past the price, and once you get past the fact that it's enormous, there's not much there not to like. It's pretty spectacular.
Well, unless you're me.
Yeah.
And then the big thing you don't like is the fact that it doesn't have Apple CarPlay.
There's that. didn't really. Found out my wife doesn't use CarPlay. Interesting. But she does. She also drives a 2016 car.
Right.
That does not have it.
Right. Right. And the thing is if you've never had Apple CarPlay, you're not used to Apple CarPlay, you're not going to miss Apple CarPlay.
I'm trying to remember if my daughter's using it or not. She's got a brand new car.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, my review of the Escalade is now up at consumerguide.com, along with our 2026 Best Buy picks and lots of other fun stuff. That voice, of course, Jill Simonello. She is a contributing editor here at Consumer. Contributing.
Yes.
I keep losing the T.
Yeah.
I mumble.
You are a mumbler.
Contributing editor here at consumerguide.com. North American Car of the Year juror and prolific freelancer.
Yes.
How you doing?
I am doing well.
We are past Christmas.
We are past Christmas.
This is the new Happy New Year.
Yes, we are heading into the new year soon.
Which is crazy.
It is. All I have to say is hallelujah. I'm so glad this year is over.
I kind of am too. Want to hear a crazy thing?
Mm.
So you get older.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be 61 in weeks.
That is crazy.
But that's not the crazy part. It's about what you get excited about when you enter your seventh decade.
Okay.
And I told my wife, I told my mom, I don't want anything for Christmas.
Okay.
I couldn't think of anything I wanted. But then I'm all excited because we got a new Brita, which may be the most depressing thing I've ever shared.
That is sad.
Yeah.
A Brita. Okay.
Water filter.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
No, I have a Brita, but it's not new.
And then we got a Brita for our faucet.
Oh, those are nice.
So.
My mom used to have one of those on her faucet. Those are nice.
So I'm a little depressed that's really all I wanted.
Well, so here's the thing. Here's my theory. Like, my husband is the hardest person in the world to shop for.
Uh-huh.
And I think that as you get older and you make money, you just buy things when you want them. Therefore, when a holiday comes around, it's just like, well, I have everything I want because I already bought it.
That is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get to a point in life where maybe you're not struggling with money anymore, and you just get what you want more or less when you want it. And even more depressing, I think, is you scale back what it is you want. Like, even though maybe you could afford to go crazy, you don't.
Right.
Because all of a sudden you're worried about retirement.
I'm still ways away from there, but yes.
Oh, it's creeping up on you. Mm. But anyway, so the year is over.
Yes.
And not this past Saturday, but the Saturday before, I visited with Steve and Johnny. Mm-hmm. I went downtown. It was nice. We hung out at WGN Studios. And they asked me to do a list of what I thought were the biggest stories of the year.
Okay.
And because I really like to conserve time.
Okay.
I've got my picks right here.
Okay.
I'm going to run these past you real fast. We can talk about them or not.
Okay. And I think I have a couple of my own.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready?
Yes.
So just a real quick response, and then we'll get back to the list. Anything you want to talk about.
Okay.
The end of the federal tax credits.
Big deal.
All right. The end of the EPA's power to fine cafe scallywags.
Less of a big deal.
All right. Hybrid madness. I'm specifically talking about the fact that the world now seems to need hybrids more than anything.
So, hashtag Toyota was right?
Yeah, but you're talking about Toyota was right as opposed to not going deeply into EVs,
yeah.
But yet they're adding EVs this year.
They are adding EVs this year, but they have a very robust hybrid lineup, and I think every vehicle they offer is either hybrid only or has a hybrid option.
I think there's one exception to that. Oh, because the Supra, but that's going away.
Well, the Supra and then the, what is it, the... I want to call it the FRS, but it's not the FRS.
It's the GR86.
Yeah. Those are the two.
Yeah. So everything else available is a hybrid. But the thing that happened, and we can get back to this in a minute if we choose, is simply that when electrics came online, all of a sudden hybrids weren't scary anymore.
Yes.
Like the new technology was here, and it's scary.
Yeah.
And going EV is, it's a challenge.
Right.
It's a thing you have to think about. But hybrids have been so good for so long.
Yep.
And Toyota hybrids have been especially good.
Yep.
There's nothing to worry about.
No.
I don't know why you wouldn't do it. And then the bonus cost is usually like $2,000.
Yeah, it's not crazy anymore.
Even if you don't drive enough for that to amortize, right, over the, just because of the cost of gas,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get some of that money back at resale.
Yeah.
So why not? The Chinese nightmare, that we haven't talked too much about this, and it's something we should probably talk to Sam about some more.
Yes.
But the Chinese auto industry is in chaos.
Okay.
They have capacity to build 2.5 times more vehicles than they buy. I'm sorry.
Right.
So they're trying to export everything. Joe Biden put up a huge tariff barrier.
100%.
Yep. So you can't sell Chinese EVs directly in the U.S.,
mm-mm.
but they are going to Western Europe, and yep. they're stirring up the muck.
Yeah, because they are affordable and well put together. We several months ago, we had, was it Patrick George from
mm-hmm.
Inside EVs on, and he had just spent some time in China, and search out that episode because it's really good because he talks a lot about Chinese EVs.
Yeah, but yeah, I think the surprise is that Chinese vehicles are good.
Yes.
And 10 years ago, they were not.
Nope.
So that industry moves fast. And then finally, the F-150 Lightning got killed, as well as the ID. Buzz.
Yes.
So those are my stories. Anything you want to talk about? Anything you want to expand on?
I mean, I would say in terms of stories that I think were kind of a big deal this year, first off, sticking with Ford, they had a record number of recalls. They set the record in terms of an automaker with recalls this year.
It is flat out depressing.
And I mean,
for everything.
It's literally for everything. And I think that a lot of those issues were software related, but it's just, and it was a lot. And they had, I want to say, 100 recalls by June.
A stupid number of recalls. These are going to be very, very expensive for them to fix. Most of them are not over-the-air updates, so that people are going to have to bring their vehicles
mm-hmm.
into dealerships, which pisses off people.
Yeah.
Because then they have to do this.
Yes. And I mean, fixing a recall is free. And the stat I'm seeing is so far for 2025, at the beginning of December, they had 142 recalls.
Every other day, almost every business day.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And they're not small recalls of five vehicles.
No,
they're
it's been
100,000 vehicles.
It's been important things. It's
yeah.
been brakes, backup cameras,
mm-hmm.
Transmission, the inner shift lock, all these things that are big deals and safety things. You can't ignore them.
Yeah. And I think to Ford's credit, they really are doing focusing on trying to fix this problem. And I know Jim Farley has been quoted as saying that he's kind of kicking himself that he didn't get on this sooner. But I took a tour of the Kentucky truck plant this summer, and they have AI monitoring all the vehicles that are coming through the line, trying to detect problems before it finishes the line. And so they're really trying to do better with quality control, and I think next year we will see this number drop significantly.
Yeah, part of the problem though is not Ford quality. It's not assembly quality. It's not even Ford engineering. Some of it is suppliers.
Yeah.
And you never openly embarrass your suppliers in public, but
no.
They have been let down by suppliers.
Yeah.
But part of the problem, and we talked about this half a year ago,
mm-hmm.
is that Ford is at the bottom of the list of its relationships with suppliers.
Mm.
And do you know what company is almost always at the top of the list? Toyota.
I was going to say Toyota.
Suppliers love Toyota, and Toyota loves the suppliers, and they don't bargain down too hard,
mm-hmm.
right? You allow your suppliers to make some money, and you work with them, and you take their phone calls, and
mm-hmm.
and it's working well.
Yeah.
Now, Toyota's had.
I was going to say, speaking of Toyota and recalls.
And this does not involve a supplier, I don't think. But
No. They're essentially, from 2022 to 2024, they're recalling pretty much all the Toyota Tundra models because of engine issues, manufacturing debris causing engine bearing failure.
And it's that core engine, the 3.4-liter V6, that is turbocharged in a bunch of stuff. And here's the thing about that. I've been reading about that, and the story's sort of slowly changing because General Motors has the exact same problem with the 6.2-liter V8, which is a heck of a good engine. And why are we hearing about these metal shavings? And part of the problem seems to be ridiculously light oil.
Yeah.
So people who don't know a lot about oil, it's branded by, not branded, but categorized by weight. When I pumped gas, you know, 10W40 was a very common weight. And that was as low as 10 weight and low as 40, depending on temperature. And that was enough. But we were talking about 0W10 and 0W20 weight oil. And that is, if that doesn't mean anything to you, and it, no reason it should, that's just very, very, very light oil. And it is not protecting the engine from tiny little things that probably would have been protected by heavier oil.
Right.
But this thin oil is used because engine tolerances are getting tighter. That's a good thing. And to improve fuel economy. It's harder to, it's easier to squeeze light oil through little passages, so you end up using less energy. You don't want to waste the energy in the engine. You want to waste it going up a hill.
So, but you know, this recall is a big deal because it's not just the Tundra. Like, there's other vehicles that get this engine that are being affected.
They will all be affected because it's not like they selectively made special engines for the Tundra. And I thought, I actually saw a little video about this. Some mechanic was talking about this. He's like, the engines are not different. So eventually we're going to see this and everything. So that's a big deal. And it's a bummer because it's Toyota and you kind of want to believe in Toyota quality. So,
well,
that
hurts. So what I thought was really surprising is they've have this massive recall, which I would argue is probably the largest recall that Toyota has ever had. Yet they also topped the reliability reports and reliability ratings, I think, from J.D. Power and Consumer Reports this year. And I'm like, how? How is that possible?
Well, you know, a couple of reasons. One, that's one problem. And it, as much as it's in the number of vehicles, if you take the Tundra out of that, it's not in very high volume vehicles. So, I mean, the Tundra,
I think it's LX also, and
That's the Lexus.
Sequoia maybe.
And those are pretty low volume vehicles for by Toyota standards. So all the other stuff, and all these things, you get the 2.5-liter turbo or hybrid, for example. Which is everything.
But so other than that, I would say the last big story that I would say, it happened at the end of 2024, but I think that it brought a lot of change and it kind of cascaded into 2025 and everything that it brought. And that was the resignation of Carlos Tavares as the CEO from Stellantis. Because when he resigned, then Tim Kuniskis came back and the Hemi came back and, you know, the Ram Rev was, you know, the EV truck was killed. And so a lot of changes came from that thing that happened at the end of 2020.
So a couple of things about that. And yes, you're exactly right. And I agree with you. But Tavares himself could not have made all those decisions. There is a board that he has to answer to. And I think that all the decisions he made were on some level logical.
The Hemi, Europe. Not for North America.
Well, but for North America too, because the interesting thing is that other companies have done what they did in terms of modernization and gotten away with it. Like this whole wild knee-jerk reaction to the Hemi by the public is crazy.
It is crazy because it's a like inferior engine to the Hurricane and it gets less horsepower and and it's going to be more expensive.
And it's slightly political too. I think that there are socially there are groups of people who would buy the Ram 1500 pickup who just don't want a modern direct injection twin turbocharged inline six.
I think that's
six.
Most truck guys, let's be honest.
To some extent, but I think that Ram more extreme. Than Ford. And certainly Chevy. But they're bringing this stuff back, and it kind of bums me out. just because I like progress.
Well, I like progress, and but I find it, I just think that, like, that one thing that happened has, like, led to a cascading effect of things.
And so what are the Tavares decisions?
Well, no, these were not Tavares decisions. These are the things that happened because he resigned.
Well, because they went back. But what we talked about the Hemi. What else was there?
I think that, well, Tim Kuniskis coming back.
Oh, yeah. Which is interesting. If a person leaves and comes back, then clearly there had been some...
angst.
Probably. Or they just waved a gigantic paycheck in front of them this time.
Right.
Either way.
Right.
But yeah, Kanizkis was always just sort of the face of performance. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, too. I'm just a little tired of the whole Hemi thing. And Red Eye, Hellcat. And it's like, eh. And it seems like to keep the sales when they were trying to move the Charger and Challenger, mm-hmm. to keep those sales flowing, there had to be special editions announced every other week.
Well, okay. So here's the thing. I hear what you're saying, but I think that before, like the EV madness happened within the Stellantis company, Dodge knew its customer. Ram knew its customer. And they like marketed to its customer, and they really like fulfilled what that customer wanted. And I think one of the biggest mistakes they made was putting an EV in the Dodge lineup. And I think that the Dodge Charger, which we're going to be talking about shortly, is a phenomenal vehicle, but it was the wrong thing for the Dodge lineup.
Maybe. So here's the thing about that, and we may have to talk about that after the quiz.
Okay.
The thing about that is that the new Charger was a really bold move, right? They're going to mm-hmm. slip that nice six-cylinder engine mm-hmm. from the Ram in there. Mm-hmm. Cool car. Mm-hmm. Also, the new Charger looks fantastic.
Oh, it's amazing.
That is a great-looking car. And I haven't driven one yet, and I was dying to drive one with the six, mm-hmm. Called the six-pack.
Yep, that's what I had.
What a cool car. But yeah, it's kind of bumming me out. But what are we going to do? Customers, you said Dodge knows their customers, but I think Dodge knows the customers it was courting specifically.
Yes.
Because the Dodge Hornet was...
Well, that was a Tavares problem and a Tavares decision or whatever happened under Tavares. Pre-Tavares, under, you know, when Kanizkis was in charge of Ram or Dodge, I think that they were making different decisions that made sense.
But Dodge should have never not had a compact crossover. I mean, every mainstream car company has one. And then they brought one in. It's a little too small, a little bit high-strung, and a little bit expensive. So I don't know how well they actually knew their customers. And I think to some degree, Dodge is a damaged brand. I think it is now just the Challenger, Charger, Hemi division. And I don't know that
they've got the Durango.
They've got the Durango. It doesn't sell well. Mm. And the Hornet didn't sell well. So it was
But the Hornet was made in Italy, and it was, I mean, based on the Tonale, the Alfa Romeo, and I think that was an inherently flawed vehicle to bring into the Dodge brand. Like, I would argue a lot of the things that they just did to the Dodge brand should have been Chrysler.
Well, I thought going way back when Chrysler became Fiat Chrysler, they should have never brought in the Fiat brand. Mm. That stuff should have been Dodge. Dodge should have been their mainstream, accessible, price-sensitive brand, and they didn't do that. Fiat was a really weird brand to establish again in the U.S.
Yeah.
Terrible reputation.
Fix it again, Tony.
Yeah, it had a terrible reputation in the U.S., and it sounds foreign.
Yeah.
And Dodge, I don't know if Stellantis buyers are going to go for that. Also, they made the Fiat dealers have separate franchises, mm-hmm. which really confused things.
Yeah, I will say one of my favorite vehicles, though, is the Fiat 500 at Barth.
It was a delight.
Delightful.
Yeah, and that should have been like the Dodge 500 RT or something. It should have been a great car. But getting back to the Hornet for a second, the Hornet's a delight to drive.
I liked the gas version better than the plug-in hybrid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's on hiatus now, too. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's coming back or not. You can still get the Tonale.
Yes.
Which is the Alfa Romeo version of that. And if you, for some reason there's a plug-in hybrid out there, run away from it.
Yeah.
You want the 2-liter turbo. It's a scream to drive.
Yes.
That car's also really cheap for an exotic brand.
Yeah.
And it's kind of mainstream because it's just really Fiat parts. That's the thing to do. You want to buy that new, hold on to it for the duration of the warranty, mm-hmm. and then think about getting rid of it.
Yeah. I mean, the infotainment system is a pain point in that, but otherwise...
screen's too small.
It is a joy to drive.
All right. We are going to take a break, mm-hmm. and when we come back, we're going to talk to Sam Fiorani of Auto Forecast Solutions.
Yes.
But maybe not about work things.
Okay.
I'll let Sam talk about what he wanted to chat about.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. She's Jill Simonillo. And these donuts rule.
They look like vomit.
I don't care. They taste they taste like Garrett's caramel corn.
You have a stronger stomach than I do.
They were maple. They were just described as maple. Also, I think that's a scone. It's not a donut.
Okay.
It's very, got that crunchy thing going on. Like the texture of what used to be called an old-fashioned donut.
Ugh.
Oh, it's so good.
It just it looks like something I clean up off the carpet.
I mean, it's aesthetically challenged, I guess, but it smells great and it's
glazed
delicious.
Vomit.
They don't sell glazed vomit. You should try a piece. Try
no,
a piece.
No, I can't. I can't.
Really?
I really can't.
Really?
I really can't.
You are the fussiest eater in the world.
I enjoy my food and I'm not going to put something like that in it, my body.
Oh, it's so good.
I'm just not.
So if it looked better but tasted worse, you'd be cool with it?
I mean, probably not. I want something to look good and taste good. Presentation is key, my friend.
All right. This is the last episode of the year, so what a perfect time to have our good friend Sam Fiorani join us. He is Sam Fiorani, Vice President of Global Forecasting at Auto Forecast Solutions. Sam, how are you today?
Doing great. How are you guys?
We are good. Having an argument about a donut here. We'll send you a picture.
I'm totally sending you a picture right now.
I already had my apple fritter of the day, and I'm jealous of your food now. So,
I actually, for my daughter's birthday yesterday, I got her an apple fritter from Spunky Dunkers.
That
They're
would
huge.
Be way better than this.
They're messy. They're a sloppy mess.
Mm. Yeah, the one I had was about the size of your head. So,
if it's the size of my head,
that's a big fritter.
That's a big fritter. Sam, how are you?
Doing very well. Happy holidays to everybody.
Well, to you too. Tell us a little bit about Auto Forecast Solutions before we get to the conversation that you chose.
Auto Forecast Solutions provides analytical services and forecasting services to the auto industry. We provide it to the suppliers, to financial houses, vehicle manufacturers, anyone who really needs to know what's going on in the industry. We're there to provide that information.
And correct me if I'm wrong, this has to be the year that you were most quoted in other publications. I saw your name like every day someplace.
Yeah, we were pretty well out there. There's so many things going on this year. So everybody was asking questions and trying to get the specifics on what was happening.
Yeah, the tariff stuff was crazy. So Sam, you had we're just going to play today, right? We're not really working. You had an idea for a conversation. Do tell.
Yes. Yeah. We were talking about bucket list things that car people should do in their lifetime or, you know, before they get too old, like I am. And this went back to a story that I read years ago of things that people should do. And I took the list that was maybe 20, 25 years ago. I took that list and said, I'm going to do some of these things. So I did things like join the Madison Avenue Sports Car Driving and Chowder Society.
Okay. Chowder.
The Chowderheads, as they are known.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. I got a short list here. Do you have anything?
No.
Okay. Well, let's go.
Sam. Well, you know what? I do. I do have a couple of things.
All right. Let's start with Sam's list. We'll go to you. And then I've got a few very short things here, but I strongly recommend them.
I broke mine down into things to do, museums, events, drives, and racing.
Okay. Go ahead.
So, and things to do, everyone should learn how to drive stick.
Yes. I support that. Give a shift.
It is. It is a difficult thing to arrange now. But I pride myself in the fact that I taught my daughter stick.
Yeah, so we have three in the family here, so most of us know how to drive. I've got to get the girls in there, but most of us know how to drive.
Well, that's cool. That's a good one. All right.
So extending that a little bit, enjoy a track day. Take a car around the track, get to speed, find out how the car is supposed to handle at 90%. Those are fun to do, and I've done the Poconos and Monticello in New York.
Track days are cool, and I've done a number of them. I've just been lucky because I'm a member of the Midwest Automotive Media Association. They've made that access very easy. Plus, if you go to a manufacturer event, sometimes they will give you a track peek at the vehicle that they are promoting at the moment. But you learn a lot, and you don't have to drive that hard, and you don't have to do anything you're uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
And, no, absolutely.
And I will say that there are a lot of automakers these days that offer up a track day as a part of your purchase. I feel like Dodge, gives you a track day at, I think there's a track in, if you buy a Hellcat or something like that, they give you a track day down in Arizona. There's a track there. BMW, I think, has performance opportunities. And so, I would say for those of you who are buying performance vehicles, you should take advantage of that manufacturer opportunity.
And Ford has those too for different Bronco models.
Yeah, the Bronco off-road.
So that's an off-road event, but it's worth doing too. And it's just as challenging and just as rewarding, even though you're driving 3 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. And you feel great when you conquer a trail.
Yeah. And I mean, you would have to pay for your travel expenses and your hotel room. But I one of the Bronco off-rodeos is in the Las Vegas area, and hotel rooms are pretty inexpensive there, and you can probably find a flight that's not horrible, and it could be a good long weekend.
Yep. Yep. All right, Sam, what else?
Yeah, associated with that, you mentioned the club you're in, the organization you're in. Join a car club or organization. Mm-hmm. I'm the president of the International Motor Press Association. I have been active members of the Society of Automotive Historians, CCCA, AACA, a number of groups like that. It's a great group to be in because you get to hear conversations and discussions about all kinds of topics that appeal to car people.
It is, and I sort of, this is very inside baseball, but Jill and I have discussed the fact that our local press association doesn't have as many luncheons as we used to.
Right.
And I regret that because hanging around car people is how you learn about cars.
That is true.
Everyone has some crazy story that's worth knowing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. When I was active in the Society of Automotive Historians, I got to hear stories about, we were told about people who worked for Tucker back in the day.
Awesome.
You run into these people who have stories and they just want to, they find out you know about cars and they just want to tell you what happened to them. It's great.
I will share this story someday if I haven't, but at the gas station I used to work at, I got stuck in a Bricklin.
Okay.
I could not get out of the Bricklin.
Okay.
So we'll tell that story later, but it's a funny story. But yeah, I'm an old guy with a story.
Yeah, you are definitely that. And I will say along the lines of car clubs, a lot of niche vehicles or, popular vehicles have car clubs. So the Mini Car Club, the Miata Car Club, something like that. And if you have one of those kind of specialized vehicles, you should certainly look into clubs in your area for
that. If you own a Miata and you're not in a club, something's wrong with you.
You are not actually a Miata owner.
Right.
Right.
Don't tell the MG folks that I'm not in an MG club yet.
Oh.
Well, I think you just did. They're going to come stalk you now.
People need to check out.
Oh, they're on my tail.
Oh, yeah.
People need to check out your Facebook Christmas post because it's a picture of you with your MG and your wife.
Yes, yes. And our two car named dogs.
What are your dogs' names?
That's Bentley and Tucker.
Those are good names.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. What else is on your list, Sam?
So I was looking at events like a good flea market, a good car show, a good driving tour, something like Carlisle or Hershey, going to a big car show like Pebble Beach or my favorite Radnor. These are great shows to go to because you get to see stuff that you won't find. Like if you go to a flea market like Carlisle or Hershey, these are 80-acre flea markets. And if it's not there, you're not going to find it. It's incredible to go to these things.
It's funny that if you go to this, I worked with a guy who bought a lot of different interesting vehicles, and he would always restore them himself. And I remember he was looking for a mirror for his Chevy C10 van, and he looked for months, maybe years, and then he found it, and it was $10.
Mm. Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I've done that too, where we trek the fields of Carlisle, which is literally 80 acres of flea market stuff, and just looking for some gadget, some piece of literature. Sometimes I'm always on the hunt for something.
I'm going to start collecting Tatra literature. I just want people to know I'm going to do that.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to get you out here one of these days, and I just was in a collection that had a Tatra, so we'll get you
really?
Out here.
We need to talk about that brand, because Jill's laughing, because I don't think you know what Tatra is.
I don't.
But it's an old Czechoslovakian brand.
Okay.
And they were way ahead of the curve in terms of design.
Okay.
Yes.
Rear engine, air-cooled V8 engines, and there's a very funny story about how those vehicles during World War II were referred to as the Nazi killers. Not because they were killing Nazis, but because people would get into these cars, they would commandeer them, mm-hmm. not understand about the big V8 engine way out and back, mm-hmm. and drive them too fast and lose control.
Okay.
So it's a crazy story. But Tatra made absolutely stunning vehicles.
Yes.
And a lot of their brochures and the things were wordless because the cars were Czechoslovakian. Mm. And not a lot of people, not even a lot of their customers spoke Czech. So.
Got it.
What else you got, Sam?
A good drive, like Route 66, mm. the Pacific Coast Highway, Pikes Peak, Mountain Washington, the Lincoln Highway. All these places where there are all kinds of sights to see. Living near the Lincoln Highway, the Lincoln Highway Association points out all the good spots along the way where you can go see old drive-ins, collections of assorted things. Roadside America, where we have... there's a storybook forest, which is a concrete reenactment of storybooks. When I was a kid, we would go there and you'd just climb on the things and experience it. And it was right down the street from my hometown.
Well, that's very cool. Is Route 66 still worth the effort? Is there a lot of stuff still there?
The people along Route 66 advertise it heavily. There are things to do. It's definitely worth the trip.
Yeah, I know we occasionally end up on Route 66 during the Rebel Rally, and it's kind of a cool experience to do.
I should be better informed about this, but somewhere in Illinois, southern Illinois, there's a chicken restaurant. And maybe it's not that far south of here. That was famous. That was there then and is still there. Hmm. It's like the Chicken Shack or something like that. Okay. But it's right on Route 66.
Okay.
So, all
right. Road trip. Maybe that's where I take you to lunch.
There you go. Yes.
Jill, except that you can't eat chicken.
Jill
never
owes
mind.
Me lunch.
Yes.
I'll just eat a double order of large fries.
Got it.
That's on my diet.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else we got, Sam?
Well, taking the Rebel Rally idea, go racing or go to a race. You know, there are SCCA events where you can autocross your car, or you can find a good road rally where it's a timed road rally, or just go to a NASCAR race or a drag race. These are experiences that every car person should have in their lifetime.
Or an IndyCar race. Just make sure you bring the earplugs.
Yes.
Most of them need earplugs, unless you're going to Formula E.
Yes, fair. And even then, I think they have a little bit of a high-pitched pipe sound.
That's a big complaint, that Formula E doesn't make the right noise.
Right.
Or any noise.
Right.
Well, going to an autocross is definitely exciting. My son go-kart races, and he goes to autocrosses and road rallies all over the East Coast and as far west as Lincoln, Nebraska. They're exciting. They're fun to drive. You learn a lot about you and the car, and it's the fastest you can drive in a parking lot. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Years and years and years ago, I was very hungover, but we were coming back from a bachelor party in Iowa. This was for my buddy Dave, and I was the worst hurt. But we had rented a motorhome for this event, and this gets to the point eventually.
Okay.
We had rented a motorhome, and I was just sleeping the next day. I wasn't feeling well. Mm-hmm. But my buddy Dave, like, you got to come out of the car. I'm like, why? He goes, you got to get out of the car. And we stopped at a gas station, and next to the gas station was this fantastic autocross track, and people were there. And it was a club, and they were autocrossing on Sunday. And the cars were fantastic because it was just a club. People were bringing their own cars. Mm-hmm. So someone was autocrossing an Audi 4000, which was really flippy floppy. That was all over the place. But a 69 or 70, no, I'm sorry, a 70 or 71 Camaro that was kicking ass. And a Lotus Elan, like the first generation Lotus Elan. Oh, my God, was this fun. Like, this is a thing to do. I need to do that. But I don't really have a car to do that in.
Any car will do, because SCCA has classes where your car will fit in. I raced my Suzuki Swift GT back in the day.
Excellent.
Volkswagen lent me a Beetle for a whole season to write about.
Wow.
And I've driven a number of other vehicles in those races, and they're so much fun and inexpensive, because you drive what you race what you drove.
Right. Yeah.
All you might need eventually is tires, right?
Or brakes.
You'll definitely need tires, because the corners of my Volkswagen were really, really rounded.
Have you ever autocrossed the MG?
The MG is not a really good autocross car, because it is 52 years old and all of 50 horsepower. So
yeah, so that'd be a little sluggish.
Yeah.
I did own an Integra, which would have been good. I should have tried.
That would have been a great car.
Yeah, I should have tried that. What else you got?
So I got museums, of course.
Oh.
Making sure you get to a collection somewhere. Some of the best museums are, of course, the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn. And if you get there, you got to go to Greenfield Village.
Yep.
Which is not just a car museum, but an Americana museum. If you're into the history of cars, the Peterson Museum in Los Angeles is fantastic.
I've never been, and I've heard great things.
Oh, Peterson is fantastic. I've been from top to bottom. We got a tour of the basement of that one. It was great. The Auburn Cord Duesenberg Museum in Auburn, Indiana. And I've got to tout Eastern Pennsylvania, where you can go to the AACA Museum in Hershey, the Simeon Museum in Philly, and of course the Boyertown Museum in Boyertown, Pennsylvania.
Which I need to get to.
Yeah, you absolutely have to.
I need to get out there, and then you can buy me dinner.
Absolutely.
You're just here for the free food.
Yeah, I just want free food. Producer Randy recommending the National Corvette Museum. That's in Bowling Green.
Yes.
I have done that, and it's fantastic.
Corvette Museum, the Lane Museum in Nashville.
Okay.
Which is the most eclectic collection you'll ever see. Mm.
Producer Randy also, and I think you just mentioned this, the Auburn Cord Duesenberg Museum.
ACD is a fantastic museum, because it's concentrates on those brands, but it's just a wonderful place to be.
And it's a short drive from Chicago for our local listeners.
There you are.
You have Volo out here too, which is like the classic or like car star movie type things.
Volo is cool. I think a little too much emphasis on muscle cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of collections do that, but if you get through the muscle cars, you'll find some very, very different products sitting around on the sides or sometimes right in the middle.
The Claremont Museum in Chicago just closed, which was just some crazy guy's private collection. No rhyme or reason.
And it was like in the middle of the city, like on a random street that you just like would. And if you didn't know it was there, you wouldn't know it was there.
No rhyme or reason. I'd like to say the guy was crazy, but it was just the stuff he liked.
Yeah.
No apologies.
No.
And you can still find, I think, most of the Claremont collection pictures on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So people want to check that out.
All right. What was on your list?
I got five things here. They're very random.
Okay.
All right. And they go way simpler. I think that anyone who has never driven a convertible needs to rent a convertible. It is a very unique experience to drive a car without a top.
Yes.
And it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful. And I think if you own a convertible, you forget how wonderful it is.
Right. Right.
This one's very important. And I made my daughter do this. And I did this a lot. And I've explained my actions to police. And they always let you go.
Okay.
And that is to find a snowy lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Just find a big parking lot where there aren't, the concrete stoppers in there or any of those, dangerous light poles. And have some fun after a snow. You learn so much about your car. You have a little fun. And it's really fun to lose control of your car a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just get a sense of what that's like. And it's a wonderful experience. It's a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm not learning at this point. I'm screwing around. But it's fun. One of the saddest things that happened to us is that we lost manual parking brakes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So that you could pull it and drift?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I had my Integra, and before that I had my Scirocco.
Right.
These were relatively low power front wheel drive cars. But at any point in time, you could turn the steering wheel a little and yank the brake.
Right.
It's an oversteer.
Well, it's
so much fun. And you want your kids to do this.
Yeah. Well, and so to build off of your snowy lot comment, I will say that around the country, there are a lot of teen driving schools that simulate that experience, like on a skid pad.
Yep. My daughter did that.
And so I would say, And they often allow parents to go through it so that parents can experience what their kids are doing. But in addition to driving maneuvers and things like that, they teach you how to change a tire and check your oil. Yep. And so I would encourage anybody to look in their area. I know Kia sponsors some teen driving schools, and they're usually really well populated around the U.S.
I wrote about that. My daughter went through that, and I went with her and wrote about that. So I'll post that in our show notes this week.
Yeah,
That's definitely something that should be on a bucket list: is teach a kid how to change oil and change tires.
Yes,
that was on my list here. Not only for the kids, but people just do it. Just the mechanical intimacy of knowing your car. Change your own oil once.
Yeah,
just do it. It's a messy business.
Just be careful not to have your face underneath the when you unplug the
Yeah, but it is easy to do. You can watch a video first, but you're going to get a little dirty. But you get to see stuff down underneath the car. It's kind of cool. You also want to do it like on the ground. You can see if you can borrow someone's, what do they call those, Sam?
Creeper,
thank you. Yeah, you want to slide underneath your car and check it out.
Yep.
Yeah, and don't get oil on your face.
No.
It's bad for you.
Yeah, maybe wear safety glasses.
Here's one, and I don't know if you guys mentioned this, or you didn't mention it, but ride a ferry.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's one up in Wisconsin over Lake Wisconsin. And I think it's called the Cossack 2, but it's a ferry. And I used to drive up there. My girlfriend, her parents used to vacation up there. What fun.
Mm-hmm.
You just pull in. That one's free. But there's one over Lake Michigan, too. There's two of them.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one from more or less central Lake Michigan called the Badger. And it was shut down for a little while because it was coal-fired.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really great experience. And you get on a boat with your car, and then you get out.
It's very trippy.
Yeah, it's all very fun, but that's worth doing too. And then finally, the sense of accomplishment. The sense of accomplishment, helping someone jumpstart a car.
Yes, everybody should know how to jumpstart a car.
Everyone should know how to do that. And I'm very proud to say that my daughter once called me. She had cables in her car. Mm-hmm. We talked about doing it. She jumpstarted someone else's car.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt like such a hero afterwards.
Well, and they have these really cool, like, contained boxes that you don't even need help from somebody else to jump your own car anymore.
The other thing, too, is that the battery isn't always under the hood, but there are connection points.
Yeah.
They're almost easier.
Yeah.
Also, your battery's not going to explode. That legend is, that's a legend.
That's a legend. I have a couple that from the conversation we had, and along with autocrossing your own car, I would look for locations where you can take your own car to a racetrack. So, our good friend Phil Miranda runs a racing school up in Michigan off the Gingerman Racetrack. And during the summers, I think that it's like 6 months, the first Monday of every month, you can sign up to take your own car and get track time. And they put an instructor in the seat with you at the beginning to test your level of driving skills, and we'll give you pointers, and then they kind of let you go and intermediate, advanced, beginner, and you get the sense of your car, and you get to have a little fun in your car.
Yeah, do that. And if you, for some reason, have a third car, like a fun, sporty third car, why aren't you doing that?
Yeah, well, and so it's really funny, because we used to have a GTI, my husband blew through the engine, but my goal was to keep that car once, like, he was done with it as a track car so that I could participate in the Gingerman track driving. So I would say look in your area, see if there's a local track that has an opportunity like that. It's really cool. It's really fun. And then the last thing that I would like to mention before we wrap, because I know we're running out of time, is Dirtfish. Dirtfish is probably one of the coolest experiences I've ever had in my automotive career. It's located in Washington State, and it is like a rally school where you learn how to drift and do rally car driving. And when I was there, they had Subaru WRX STI hatchbacks. So I don't know if they still have those or what they've switched to at this point, but they had both manual and automatic transmissions, and the instructors there are phenomenal. They teach you how to drift. You're driving in dirt, and you're I think they have 1 day, 2 day, and 3 day classes, and it is a blast. I would like to get this for my husband at some point as a gift.
I used to go up to the, what was it called? The spring up in Road America, open drive event, SCCA.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The spring, what was it called? Well, it's a fantastic event every year. And there was a group up there called Team Havoc. Mm-hmm. And it was a company that basically made VR6 versions of the GTI, the Volkswagen GTI.
Okay.
You could rent them.
Okay.
And it was funny because the people who drove them weren't very good.
Right.
And they were in a car that was pretty quick.
Yeah.
But Volkswagen still at the time would do that thing where they would lift a wheel in some corners. So there would just be three wheels down. Like, oh, this is so much fun to watch. And the Team Havoc cars were great to watch because the guys in them weren't great. Mm-hmm. But they were really trying.
Right.
Very entertaining. Well, Sam, your list is awesome. Did we miss anything?
No, I think we added everything there. That's, I'm sure everybody else has their own list of things, but they, I enjoy making sure that people get out to drive, to see museums, and see some of these events that pop up all over the place.
Well, that sounds good. Speaking of museums, remind people about the Boyertown Museum of Historic Vehicles.
The Boyertown Museum of Historic Vehicles is in Boyertown, Pennsylvania, just about an hour outside of Philadelphia. And we have a collection of mostly Pennsylvania-sourced vehicles and alternative fueled vehicles, including electric vehicles over 100 years old.
That's very cool. Sam, thank you so much for joining us and being our last guest of the year.
I'm so happy to be here. Always glad to talk to you guys.
It's been awesome, Sam. Have a great New Year's Eve.
Happy New Year's to everybody.
New Year's.
That was Sam Fiorani, Vice President of...
Auto Forecast Solutions.
No, that's not the full title, though. Sam Fiorani, Vice President of Forecasting.
Oh, okay.
Yes, at Auto Forecast Solutions. We're going to take a break, and it's quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, last episode of 2025.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Tom, she's Jill. We got a couple of things to do, so we're going to go quick.
Okay, this is the untimed-timed me with my social media, Jill. Yep. Simonello, Car du Jour, all the things. How's that?
Sounds good.
Okay.
I'm Car Guy Tom on Twitter and X and Blue Sky. Check that out. All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Last quiz of the year.
Speed quiz.
Last quiz is good because it's sort of about weight. Like, we're all going to be making resolutions now.
I'm not.
Okay. I'm probably not either. At least not what I'm going to keep.
I do birthday resolutions.
But today's topic is 2 tons.
Okay.
2 tons.
2 tons.
And I spelled it British, T-O-N-N-E-S.
Okay.
I didn't, actually.
Okay.
Base curb weight, you're just going to have to tell me. I'm going to give you a vehicle, and you have to tell me if the base model of that comes in under 2 tons.
Okay.
It's that easy.
It is not that easy, but okay.
All right, ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going quickly here. You ready?
Okay.
2026 Ford Maverick, 2 tons?
No.
No. Starts at 3,700 pounds. You're on the board.
Okay.
The 2026 Chevrolet Blazer, Chevy's good-looking midsize crossover.
Yes.
What? Oh, is 2 tons?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Just under. 3918.
Okay.
That was a tough one. You've got 1 point. The 2026 Toyota Tacoma.
Yes.
No.
Oh!
It's a pudgy little thing.
No, yes, it's over.
Oh, it's over. I'm sorry. Okay, all right. Wait, did you say yes?
Yes.
Okay, all right. 4,250 pounds. You've got 2 points.
Okay, and you should probably say what 2 tons is.
4,000 pounds.
Well, I mean... Okay.
I don't know that we have any listeners that don't know that.
Okay.
I hope.
I mean.
They're metric tons. See, that would confuse things.
Metric tons.
That would confuse things.
Okay.
Because that's more weight.
Okay.
That's more resolution. 2026 Mazda CX-50. Mazda's very likable compact crossover built in Alabama.
I'm going to say yes.
Standard all-wheel drive. You think that would add to the weight, but no, 3741.
Okay.
You need one more. You got 2 more questions. Well, 1 more question and the bonus question.
Okay.
Bonus question, always related to the topic of the day.
Always.
2026 Chrysler Pacifica, 2 tons?
Yes.
Yes. By a lot.
I was going to say, that's big.
It's a pudgy booger.
Stuff.
4521. All right. You have won. The bonus question is just for fun.
Woo!
Are you ready?
Yes.
This is right up your alley.
Okay.
4 real TV shows, but only 3 real MD characters.
MD?
MD, medical doctor.
Oh, got it.
Which is the fake? I'm going to give you 4 shows. I'm going to list 4 doctors. One of those doctors is not real.
I'm not, sure not I'll real. Understand when you go
not
into
it. Not real as in not a character on that show.
Got it. Okay.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The Rockford Files.
Okay.
Dr. John. Gunsmoke, Doc Adams. Enterprise, that's the prequel show to Star Trek. Dr. Phlox. And finally, The Simpsons, Dr. Nick. One of those doctors is fake.
Yeah, by the way, not familiar with any of those shows.
Also, I did this at like 4 in the morning.
Okay, when you were watching these shows?
No, I just wasn't thinking very clearly.
I'm not familiar with any of these shows. So, say them one more time.
Okay, you've heard of all of the shows.
Except for the Enterprise prequel.
Really? Enterprise?
You don't? I know the Enterprise, but not the prequel.
It's just called Star Trek Enterprise.
Okay.
It's actually a very good show.
Okay.
The Rockford Files, Dr. John. Gunsmoke, Doc Adams. Enterprise, Dr. Phlox. And The Simpsons, Dr. Nick.
I'm going to say Dr. Phlox.
Is the fake?
Yeah.
That one's real.
Okay.
Dr. Nick was real. Hey, everybody. You don't know Dr. Nick?
No.
Oh, quack doctor. He's great.
Okay.
Gunsmoke, Doc Adams. He's the real.
I figured that one was real.
Yeah. And then Dr. John's the fake. Dr. John, actually a wonderful musician. May he rest in peace.
Okay.
Hit song, Right Place at the Wrong Time. Fantastic album called Duke Elegant, which was a tribute to Duke Ellington.
I had a high school lit teacher who was called Dr. John.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We're going to talk real quick about the Ford F-150 Ford Maverick Lobo.
No, we already talked about that.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. See, I told you it was up late.
Oh, man. Dodge Charger 6-pack.
That's it. And tell this is an interesting story, right? Because the Charger was all new for 2025,
mm-hmm.
and it was all electric for 2025.
Mm-hmm.
So the news now is the 6-pack.
Yes.
Which no longer involves 6 single barrel carburetors, but 6 cylinders.
Inline 6 cylinder. Yes.
Yes.
550 horsepower, I believe, is the number for the high output engine, which is what I had. And so the design is exterior design is exactly the same as what you would see on the electric vehicle. The hood
and that's an incredibly good looking car.
Incredibly good looking. The hood is going to be different because in the 6-pack you have like a little bulge for the engine, whereas with the electric vehicle it kind of scoops down with an aerodynamic wing on the front.
That bulge may have been a nod to the old 6-pack carburetor setup.
Okay. So the thing that I find confusing about that, though, is 6-pack, they have it spelled out on the hood facing the driver, but you can't see it from when you're sitting in the driver's seat. So it seems like it would make sense if you would face it out. I don't know. That was a weird design choice. But outside of that, I really liked this vehicle. It is really interesting in terms of the design. I liked how it sounded. I even did a video of doing like a cold start of the engine. And I asked people, you know, what does this sound like to you? Because I think it sounds way better than a 6-cylinder engine. I think it sounds like a V8.
Yeah, whatever. I'm just interested in having this really great inline 6-cylinder engine mm-hmm. that should outperform like old versions of the Hemi, right? The 5.7 and the, what was the 6.4 in the 392.
Mm-hmm.
So, but fun to drive. This car's had such a rough life already,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? The EV is underperforming in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. There was going to be a base model of the 6-pack with less horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, these engines were going to parallel those in the Ram.
Right.
So there's going to be 420 and 540 horse, but they found 10 horsepower. But there's no base version anymore either. So there's just this version that you drove.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was the two-door model, so it was the Scat Pack Plus. So it has like all the gadgets and bells and whistles and things on it, carbon fiber package. It had the ambient lighting, which they're calling an attitude adjustment, which is very Dodge. And it was very nimble, very fast, and very fun to drive, but it is very wide.
I heard this. I actually read this in a different review. It feels kind of big.
Oh, it is very wide. And so I back into my garage space, and I have a very narrow chute that I have to go in through to get up to my parking space. And I like had to go like a 20-point turn to line it up just so that it was perfectly like 1 inch on either side of my garage to get it into the garage space.
Yeah, and that's a little – big sedans are just kind of old school.
Yeah.
Did you drive a two-door or four-door?
I drove the two-door.
Okay, because there's now there is no Challenger. There's just two-door and four-door versions of the Charger.
Charger. And so the four-door, I think, is the newest. They came out with the two-door first. But the vehicle that I drove had, you know, the blacktop package, the carbon suede package, the 20-inch wheels, like all of the glass roof, all the things, and it was about $70,000. It was very expensive. Yeah,
a little expensive.
But, I mean, when you look at the base price for the vehicle, it's a little bit more affordable at $54,000. But all around, well-balanced, fun to drive, comfortable seats, attractive. This was one of the cars that I drove that I had people saying, hey, can we meet for lunch so that I can look at this?
Here's the thing. This is what the muscle car is now, in a good way, I think.
I agree.
Yeah. All right. All right. Guess what we did?
We had some really good conversations.
Yeah. Big thanks to Sam Fiorani of Auto Forecast Solutions. Thank you, Jill. Thank you to producer Randy. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Remember to check us out at ConsumerGuide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at CarStuff@ConsumerGuide.com.